anybody joining us for the first time with this series that needs a little background? Okay. Fine. Part of Krishna's performing his pastimes in Vrindavan, because according to our scriptures, in every yuga cycle, Vasudeva Krishna appears, four-armed Krishna, and he resides in Dwarka and Mathura. But every 1,000 yuga cycles makes one day of Brahma. Once one of those 1,000 yuga cycles, Krishna leaves Mathura and goes to Vrindavan and exhibits his Vrindavan pastimes. When Krishna exhibits his Vrindavan pastimes, according to our acharyas, there are two different aspects of those pastimes. One are the nitya pastimes, same as in the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, eternal pastimes, same pastimes. But there's another aspect, and that's the occasional or nimitya pastimes. They're different. There's some aspects of Krishna's earthly pastimes that are different than the Goloka pastimes, such as Krishna's birth. Krishna doesn't take birth in Goloka, but he takes birth when he appears and performs his pastimes, in his earthly pastimes. Another is the appearance of demons. There's no demons in Goloka. But when Krishna appears here, there's demons, and he kills the demons. So that's a difference. And there's no marriages of the gopis in Goloka. But here there's marriages of the gopis. And there's details in relation to that also. And unqualified people, there's a very important merciful aspect. Unqualified people can see Krishna's pastimes here on earth. Not only in Vrindavan, but outside of Vrindavan. Kamsa saw Krishna, an unqualified person, and many others. So there's some differences. Those differences are called nimitya, occasional. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains there's a purpose for those occasional pastimes. They're especially meant for us, the sadhakas, those that aren't at the stage of perfection. Because when Krishna appears, with him come his eternal associates. He descends with his entire abode, all of his eternal associates, and performs his pastimes to attract the hearts of us, the conditioned souls, and so on, his devotees within this realm. But there, an aspect of those occasional pastimes is there's a special potency in each of them for extracting from the hearts of the sadhakas, us, tendencies that keep us away from purity. Because only with purity can one enter into Krishna's eternal pastimes. Nitya Lila Pravishta. Pravishta, enter into. So this is a discussion, this visit, this time spent here in Naperville, is a discussion based upon the guidance of especially Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and following him, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in their writings on the aspects of the contamination of souls, conditioned souls, and how these nimitya pastimes, the killing of demons specifically, portion of his occasional pastimes, can help us by remembering the pastimes, hearing the pastimes. Particularly, he mentions understanding the purpose, the occasional aspect of the purpose of those pastimes, and thereby free ourselves from our contaminations and come to the perfect stage. So that's what we're doing. And we've already discussed putana, the representing the tendency to be misguided by false teachers or false teachings and be false or pretentious followers. There's a protection given by Krishna to those who are sincere and wish to properly establish themselves in their relationship with Krishna and be protected from false teachings and false teachers. Then last night we heard the second demon, Shakatasura, when Krishna was only 3 months old. Krishna delivered Shakatasura. Putana became an assistant to Mother Yasoda in Goloka. Trinavarta, when he was killed, he was liberated by the touch of Krishna's feet. And Trinavarta represents the load of bad habits that we carry. So if we're going to establish ourselves within proper teachings, under a proper teacher, we have to get rid of our bad habits. We can't hold on to them and continue to make spiritual progress. We'll be impeded. We won't reach Krishna. But Krishna is very kind. By delivering Trinavarta, he exhibited his desire and capacity and willingness to help us become relieved of our bad habits. It's not like we just put it on Krishna's plate and walk away. Say, hey, he'll take care of it. Krishna will help us. There has to be this strong sincerity and wish to come again to Krishna. And then Krishna will help us, relieve us of our bad habits. And now we're discussing the third demon that Krishna at least is described in Srimad Bhagavatam and described also by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Trinavarta demon. And Vishwanath, there's many references to commentaries of our acharyas and other even versions like Garga Samhita. It's not exactly Srimad Bhagavatam, but Garga Samhita and other writings, authorized Vaishnava literature, that give a description of these pastimes, Vishnu Purana and other places that describe different portions of these pastimes of Krishna. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, writes, Krishna began to think, he's 1 year old in his lila. Of course, he's not 1 year old, but in his lila, showing, exhibiting the form of a 1 year old, Krishna thought, while living in Vraja, I do not deserve to be covered up or restricted at all. Thinking in this way, Krishna desired to go into the sky. Why should I just perform pastimes here? I'd like to go in the sky and perform pastimes. If you remember the way that Bhaktivinoda Thakur described these nimitya pastimes are simultaneously beneficial for the conditioned soul and simultaneously exhibiting some feature of Krishna's ecstatic mood of experiencing some desire for happiness. So he summons his potencies, and we'll hear some more about those potencies. Ultimately, the internal potency or the Yogamaya potency arranges all of this. So the chapter begins. The part that's in brackets is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. But one day, a year after Krishna's appearance, Mother Yashoda was patting her son on her lap. But suddenly she felt the child to be heavier than a mountain peak, and she could no longer bear his weight. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna knew that Trinivarta was coming and he wanted to kidnap Yashoda along with himself. Therefore Krishna displayed his Aishvarya Shakti in order to prevent any pain coming to Yashoda. That was Aishvarya, means opulence. There's another term, his mystic siddhis, but that's one of his opulences, Aishvarya Shakti. Becoming heavier than the heaviest, Krishna forced Yashoda to place him on the ground. And Krishna thought, Yashoda can only lift me a little, but I want to play in the sky. So there's these simultaneous internal happiness of Krishna, I want to play in the sky. And in a very practical way, addressing the danger of the coming demon, Trinivarta. So, feeling the child to be as heavy as the entire universe. So, this is one of the eight mystic cities, Mahima City, become heavier than the heaviest. Krishna summons his Mahima Siddhi. So he became very, very heavy. Heavier, as heavy as the entire universe, and that's heavy. And therefore, being anxious, thinking that perhaps the child was being attacked by some other ghost or demon, other ghost because of the Shakatasura and Putana. And here's another ghost, he's becoming very heavy. The astonished mother Yashoda put the child down on the ground and began to think of Narayana, because she and Nanda Maharaj, they're worshippers of Narayana. They're Vaishnavas. She had no alternative than to remember the lotus feet of Narayana, for she could not understand that Krishna was the original source of everything. So, to prevent difficulties impending, another ghost or another something, danger coming, immediately she called for the brahmanas to do the necessary counteracting of evils, rituals. And then she went about her household affairs. So here's Trinivarta carrying the child, and here he is flying in the air. But here's Mother Jasoda with Krishna in her lap, and then placing Krishna down. Trinivarta is carrying Krishna away. Mother Jasoda is seeing, oh no. And then, of course she didn't see it, we'll hear. And then down here, Trinivarta came crashing to the ground, landing on a stone slab and his body smashing to pieces. Again, from this is Vaishnava Toshini, another commentary. This is by Sanatan Goswami. He explained, previously Kamsa sent an ordinary form, sent with an ordinary form, Putana, as a baby killer. So she had an ordinary form, like with, as a woman, like a beautiful woman. Kamsa became worried when she was killed, even though she disguised herself. He then sent Shakata, who did not appear with any form of air. When he was killed, Kamsa became greatly frightened. He then sent the whirlwind demon, who was with form and without form. Very strong and impossible to grasp. So while the child was sitting on the ground, a demon, there is Kamsa instructing, look at that guy, Trinavarta, to go take Krishna away and kill him. So Trinavarta came, servant of Kamsa's, came there as a whirlwind at Kamsa's instigation and very easily carried the child into the air. It's notable because just previously he was heavier than the entire universe. So Krishna just switched his mystic cities from Mahima to Laghima, became very light. So it was very easy. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he says, by the influence of his Aishwarya Shakti, although previously very heavy, Krishna became so light that Trinavarta could lift him. And as he began lifting him, he was acting as a whirlwind, and with the swirling of the wind, the dust of Vrindavan became so thick, people couldn't even see themselves. And there was a very strong, vibrating sound, fearful sound, like a tornado or something. For a moment, the whole pasturing ground was overcast with dense darkness from the dust storm. And Mother Yashoda wasn't able to... Naturally, the first thing she did is went to look to see, where's my child? She couldn't even see. Except she could understand Krishna wasn't there anymore. Immediately she was stricken with grief. There's the world when Krishna being picked up. Do, 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 do. And off into the air. Because of the dust storm stirred up by the strong whirlwind, Mother Yashoda could find no trace of her son. Their eyes were covered because so much dust. Nor could she understand why. Thus she fell on the ground like a cow who has lost her calf, and began to lament piteously. She was, of course, blaming herself for being negligent, and now just see Krishna's gone. Trinavarta intended to take Krishna up in the sky and kill him, but Krishna enjoyed the pastime of riding on Trinavarta's body and traveling for a while in the sky. That was part of the Leela. I want to go play in the sky. And here's Braja way back down on the ground. Krishna, this is commentary here, Krishna held Trinavarta's neck as if afraid. By this he showed actions of a human child. Then comes this competition, one's a mystic against Krishna. So he showed his Mahima city and took Krishna away as if he was an ordinary child. But Krishna had superior, naturally, mystic Mahima city. So Krishna became heavier than Trinavarta. So this is now commentary. Here is a competition in yogic power between Krishna and Trinavartasura, By practicing mystic yoga, asuras generally attain some perfection in the eight siddhis or perfections, namely anima, lakima, mahima, prapti, prakamya, ishitva, vashitva, and kama vasayata. But although a demon may acquire such powers to a very limited extent, he cannot compete with the mystic power of Krishna. For Krishna is Yogeshwar, the source of all mystic power. Yatra Yogeshwaro Hari. So they have this mystic power battle up in the sky. Here's a list. We don't need to go through it, but anima lagima. Mahima, ishitva, ishitva, to act freely, even to create something wonderful or to annihilate anything at will. Vashitva, to control all material elements. These are available to yogis because they're powers that Krishna has. So they, by following proper means, and receiving some special mercy from Krishna, some small portion of those capacities of Krishna become invested in those yogis, and then the yogis do some magic and people go, oh, you must be God. And they don't say no. Or they say, yes, I am God. Prakamya. To possess powers as will never be frustrated in any desire. Commonly prakamya, of this prapti, get anything from anywhere and everywhere. And then this kama vasayata siddhi, to assume any shape or form one may even whimsically desire. So some of the associates of Kamsa, the demons, they had this one. It's a mystic power. And they could change from this one to that one. Having assumed the form of a forceful whirlwind, the demon Trinavarta took Krishna very high in the sky. But when Krishna became heavier than the demon had to stop his force and could go no further. Thus Trinavarta's attempt to kill Krishna failed. This is commentary. While Krishna, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Vigraha, enjoyed this pastime. Now, since Trinavarta was falling because of Krishna's heaviness, he wanted to save himself by throwing Krishna off from his neck. But he was unable to do so because Krishna held him very tightly. Because of Krishna's weight, Trinavarta considered him to be like a great mountain or a hunk of iron. But because Krishna had caught the demon's neck, the demon was unable to throw him off. This is the cart demon. There's different pastimes of Krishna being exhibited in this painting. But of course, that's our friend Trinavarta. Here he comes crashing down to the ground. This would be the last time for Trinavarta's yogic power. Now he was going to die by the arrangement of Krishna. With Krishna grasping him by the throat, Trinavarta choked, unable to make even a sound or even to move his hands and legs. His eyes popping out, The demon lost his life and fell, along with the little boy, down to the ground of Vraja. When the force of the dust storm and the winds subsided, Yashoda's friends, the other gopis, approached Mother Yashoda, hearing her pitiful crying, not seeing Krishna present. They too felt very much aggrieved and joined Mother Yashoda in crying, their eyes full of tears. While the gopis who had gathered were crying for Krishna, the demon fell from the sky onto a big slab of stone, his limbs dislocated as if he had been pierced by the arrow of Lord Shiva, like Triparasura. So there's a big stone slab. There he is going up in the air. But by this time, even before he smashed on the stone slab, he was already dead. He left his body. And he just smashed. Now this reference to Triparasura is because it's in the Bhagavatam, we can take it as something that actually took place. The description of this reference is there were three demons in Satya Yuga who were sons of another demon. Didn't give, you know, the genealogy of their father. But there were three demons who they did the Hiranyakashipu program. They went into the forest and they did austerities. For 1,000 years they did the Dhruva Maharaj program. They stood on one leg and they ate only air. But of course, they didn't want Vishnu. They wanted power. Dhruva got Vishnu, and they got some power. And after, they even outdid Hiranyakashipu, after 1,000 years of standing on one leg, 1,000 years they stood on their heads. Pretty good. So Lord Brahma came, asked what benediction they would like. They said, we want the same thing as Hiranyakashipu. We want immortality. He said, no, I can't give you immortality. I don't have immortality. Ask for something else. So they asked for something else. They asked for three mystical cities to be constructed. One made of gold, one made of silver, one made of iron, and they would live peacefully, uninterfered with, for 1,000 years in those three cities, and after 1,000 years, those three cities would be merged into one city, Triparasura, and that they would be able to live up to the point in time where one arrow would come and destroy that city, and then their life would be finished. So Lord Brahma said, so be it. And Vishvakarma created these mystical places, one in heaven, one in the earthly realm, and one of the lower regions. When the demigods came to know of this arrangement of Lord Brahma, they were big anxiety. They approached Lord Brahma, help, please do something. He said, I already gave the benediction, I can't do something. So they approached Lord Shiva. And there's a long interlude which I'm not going to share, but eventually he said, okay, I'll help. He requested Vishvakarma to make a golden chariot and special weapon, his Pashupati Astra weapon. He went with his entourage to the Tripura city and fired the arrow, and at once the whole city was annihilated. And that's the reference. as if he had been pierced by the arrow of Lord Shiva, like Triparasura. So he was finished, as was the demons who were inhabiting Triparasura. So when he fell to the ground, the gopis immediately picked Krishna up from the chest of the demon and delivered him, free from all inauspiciousness, to Mother Yashoda. Because the child, although taken into the sky by the demon, was unhurt, and now free from all danger and misfortune, the gopis and cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, were extremely happy. And they said, "It is most astonishing that although this innocent child was taken away by the Rakshasa to be eaten, he has returned without having been killed or even injured. Because this demon was envious, cruel, and sinful, he has been killed for his own sinful activities." And the commentary says, "This is the law of nature. An innocent devotee is always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and a sinful person is always vanquished for his sinful life." And other commentators speak like this. The coward men and women became very happy to get back their beloved child Krishna. At that time they began to talk about how wonderful it was that the demon took away the child to devour him, but could not do so. Instead, he fell down dead. Some of them supported. This is proper, because those who are too sinful die from their sinful reactions. And child Krishna is pious. Therefore, he was saved from all kinds of fearful situations. And we too must have performed great sacrifices in our previous lives, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, giving great wealth and charity, and acting philanthropically for the general welfare of men. Because of such pious activities, the child is saved from all danger. So we can see the residents of Braja were not unfamiliar with the standards of pious life. And they lived their life accordingly. Again and again there's reference, some difficulty, go to the brahmanas, before some yajna, chant mantras. You didn't go get a gun or, you know, something. They turned to theistic conduct. Now the end of the pastime is, one day, Mother Yashoda, overflowing with affection, having taken Krishna up and placed him on her lap, was feeding him from her breast, which flowed with excess milk. And the purport or the commentary of this says, the killer of Trinavarta, Krishna thought, this is Vishwanath, having killed this demon, covered by passion and ignorance, who thought he was important and took me away, I now shall bewilder my own people. The Leela Shakti shows the powers within Krishna in order to pacify Yashoda, who had become dried up by the previous fears and worry about future disturbances. So Krishna was wishing, Mother Yashoda, she's been in such anxiety, maybe another demon will come. My dear child, what, you know, so she's in anxiety. So he wants to mitigate that anxiety, and with a little bewilderment. So, when the child Krishna was almost finished drinking, Yashoda was about to kiss his smiling face, the baby yawned. And Mother Yashoda saw in his mouth the universe, the whole sky, the higher planetary systems, and the earth, the luminaries, the directions, the sun, the moon, fire, air, the seas, islands, mountains, rivers, forests, and all kinds of living entities, moving and non-moving. This is when he's 1 year old. similar pastime took place when he's a little older. So what did Mother Yashoda do? Upon seeing this, Mother Yashoda's heart began to throb, and she murmured within herself, "How wonderful this is!" She could not express anything, but simply closed her eyes. She was absorbed in wonderful thoughts. Her memory was covered by Yogamaya, therefore Krishna could continue unimpeded with his leelas. And that's the end of the chapter. So this, the object of her affection and love, Krishna, who she was worried may be in difficulty again and again and again, he's showing this opulence. So really you don't need to worry, Mom. Everything's going to be all right. Actually, the chapter ends with this. Nanda and the other cowherd men then decided to change their residence from Gokula to Vrindavan to protect Krishna and Balaram from the attack of too many demons. When Rama and Krishna saw Vrindavan, Govardhan, and the banks of the river Jamuna, they both enjoyed great pleasure. So that's the end of the pastime. Now there's a little description from Garga Samhita about the previous life of Trinavarta. He was actually a devotee of Lord Hari, but he had some other problems. He had some material desires, like big time material desires. Once on the shore of the Reva, in a very splendid place filled with flowering vines, he enjoyed pastimes with 1,000 beautiful women. He had a little lusty desire. Then when Durvas Muni came there, the king was so absorbed in himself, he failed to pay obeisances and offer respects. Durvas couldn't put 2 and 2 together and understand this is a very low person. So he cursed him, "Oh, evil-hearted one, become a demon." That's all it takes when you get a curse from Durvas Muni, you're finished. The king fell at his feet. Begging forgiveness for his mistake. So Durvasa said, "O king, the touch of Lord Krishna's form will give you liberation." So he became Trinavarta, and by the touch of Krishna he attained liberation. Now the others, some description of the arrangement for their liberation is described with, in the case of Trinavarta, there's none. Now the conclusion, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described like this. Trinavarta represents the false pride produced by useless scholarship, which gives rise to wrangling debates and arguments, dry reasoning and dry logical indulgences in the association of people who are attached to such things. We've all associated with people like that. This false pride produced by useless scholarship produces controversy, which is disloyal to the path of pure bhakti, such as Mayavada in Buddhism. It is the breeding place of demoniac, sinful philosophies. Now, probably all of us have our experience of meeting people who are core, convinced Mayavadis. Some even have read so many books, their heads are spinning. But they're, because of that indulgence in Mayavad philosophy, moving forward, when they hear the message of bhakti, it's difficult for them. Or it's not only difficult, they just revolt. It can't go in. They've been poisoned by that Mayavad philosophy. We have less experience here in the West, at least until more Chinese people come here. But going to China, I meet it, encounter it regularly. It's very difficult for them to receive the understanding of Krishna as a person, or God as a person. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes about it. It's repulsive. It doesn't go in. It like a system that repels something. It's just like a system. It can't. There are some things that are like Vaishnavism and Buddhism as far as understanding the peril of sense gratification and the mind that's contaminated by those things. But it's, as he writes, disloyalty to the path of pure bhakti is produced between this Trinavarta-like influence. So Lord Krishna becomes moved by the humility of his devotees who carefully avoid this fault, and he strangles the demon, removes the thorn from his devotees' endeavors in devotional service. So we know this example from the Bhagavatam, that the frog and the snake, when the frog is croaking, demonstrating his noise-making ability, he's inviting death. So similarly, those who are influenced by false pride arising from material scholarship, it gives rise to bogus philosophies that destroys them and their spiritual lives. I'll just read it. This is nice. This is a morning walk where Prabhupada is presenting the Dr. Frog message. Dr. Singh, Srup Damodar Maharaj. Scientists extend their knowledge about life on this planet, thinking that it must apply to life on other planets also. Srila Prabhupada, yes. They are thinking foremost of their own selves. They are thinking limitedly in terms of their own circumstances. This is what we call Dr. Frog's philosophy. Once there was a frog in a well. And when a friend informed him of the existence of the Atlantic Ocean, he asked the friend, "Oh, what is this Atlantic Ocean?" "It's a vast body of water," his friend replied. "How vast? Is it twice the size of this well?" "Oh no, much, much larger," his friend replied. "How much larger?" 10 times the size." In this way the frog went on calculating. "But what is the possibility or even understanding the vastness of the great ocean in this way? Our faculties, our experience, and our powers of speculation are always limited. The speculations of the scientists only give rise to such frog philosophy." Now, in one sense, you know, too bad. But so now they have a frog philosophy instead of descending knowledge philosophy. But for innocent sadhakas, that can be a problem. Those who have dealt with new people, new devotees. I'll just share this with you. In my discussions with Kripa Moya, who has been dealing with congregational preaching for probably 3 decades, Prabhupada disciple, wonderful devotee, he said from his experience, after people, maybe 6 months to 1 year, are living or taking up Krishna consciousness, 2 big things invariably cause a problem or appear as a problem. It's not like they weren't there. It's just kind of like so much purification has taken place now. There are these monsters standing and looking at them. One is all that they've heard from science and Western philosophy, philosophical speculations about reality and existence. And it's a big obstacle from his experience. And the other is this thing with both on the one side Mayavad philosophy and the other side demigod worship, at least so particularly for the Indian community. Demigod worship is not a problem for the rest of us. Just don't know about it. So aside from, so this one over here is the science part, but just the tendency to understand things by sense perception and by interpreting the sense perception. The classic example is the elephant and five different people holding different parts of the elephant blindfolded, then asked to describe what an elephant is. So one may get a little piece of the picture and think by speculation, this is what it is, this is reality. This is from a BTG article, Big Bang, Big Questions. So the speculative tendency is there, as Prabhupada expressed, the speculative tendency along with the tendency for sense gratification, these are the two big items. Anyavilashita shunyam jnana karma dinavritam. So it's perfectly appropriate that Krishna is encountering Trinavarta as the third demon. Become properly established in relationship with Krishna by proper guidance. Become free from bad habits, tendencies for being enjoyers of matter, and the tendency to speculate. And encountering those who have such tendencies to speculate and becoming influenced by speculative tendencies and the conclusions of speculative tendencies. It's a very nice lila. The dust is flying in all directions. You can't even see. Become very bewildering. Unless the protection from Krishna is there to keep one very clearly fixed in freeing oneself from such speculative tendencies, trying to understand things in that way. I know some devotees that they just can't get over it. They continue to speculate and spin and spin. And then if it's not spin out on this, it's spin out on that. It's just a tendency. And it's unfortunate. But Krishna can protect us from such tendency and being in the environment where others have that tendency and become confused by the speculative productions of others. We should be very careful in things that we read or hear or pick up. Persons that read so many books, we know such people too, read this book, read that book, then they get really confused. They can't go anywhere, they're just spun out. But that's not the method of attaining spiritual knowledge. We need to fix ourselves in that right method, take shelter of that, and Krishna's protection will be there. And that's this Trinavarta demon being killed, lila. Any discussion or questions? Yes.
Maharaj, is Durvasmini the same person who offended Ambarish Maharaj?
Say it again, please.
Is Durvasmini the same?
Same. There's only one.
Lord.
Go ahead.
Among the,
what? Little softer, please.
Among this, all the scientists discussing about the Big Bang theories, do they really discuss themselves what is the truth in this Big Bang theory?
Do they discuss the truth?
Yes.
As far as they're concerned, it is the truth. There are major scientists, take the microphone from him, Simone. Major, you know, careers, and multiple persons with similar careers who are totally invested in, it's, to them it's not a theory, it's what happened. And they have all of their calculations and observations and interpretations of those observations to verify with others who have similar, very, very sophisticated systems of explaining things in language that nobody but them can understand. So to them, the answer to your question is, as far as they're concerned, they are addressing reality. They're dedicated to it. Deeply. They're convinced that's how it all began.
Because I was reading my memory says that somebody was previously discussing with the Prabhupada about the Big Bang theories, and Prabhupada was saying where the power comes to the Big Bang. That's what Prabhupada
said. He was saying a number of things, that's one of them. You know, so theists have their refutation of Big Bang theory. But those adherents of Big Bang theory, it's not a theory. There's always the thing of persons of different view supporting their particular view and criticizing the view of the other. Okay. As far as they're concerned, they have evidence. They have empiric evidence to support their view. Measurements of all kinds of things with their instruments by which they can then say everything came from this single point. And I attended I made a presentation at a Indian Graduate Student Association, IGSA, program at one university, presenting the Vedic picture of Sariputta's work, Mysteries of the Sacred Universe, and so forth. And during the question-answer period, these are Indian graduate students saying, they didn't even hear what I said, they said, our scientists can have calculated down to milliseconds the Big Bang. Those milliseconds they can't calculate mathematically. But from that point on to the present moment where everything is moving in the universe, they know where it came from, they know where it is, and they know where it's going next, and then the predictions of where it's going next, sure enough, it happens. It's empiric proof. They've got the right picture of things in their perspective.
So they really don't know the exact answer for this. This is just their perceptions of it.
Well, It's their interpretation of data. There's data, and there's sense perception, and there's the reasoning power to evaluate the sense perception. As far as they're concerned, there isn't another way to interpret it. It's data, and there isn't another way to interpret it until somebody else comes along and says, no, you can't interpret it that way, you have to interpret it this way, and you have a better reasoning system or a different one. And some people buy into that different one. So that's the way it goes. But just understand, it's the illusory energy at work. Anyway, it's a different system of trying to understand things, and that's exactly what this is presenting. That such a tendency is represented by Trinavarta. And Krishna can protect the devotee from that tendency. Anything else? Yes, Subal.
Maharaj, I have two questions. Sure. Okay. One is, there's two things, the qualities, you know, bad qualities that is being discussed here. And one is pride and the other one is the tendency to speculate. Are they two,
They're connected.
They're
connected, yeah.
So if we can assume that if we have this tendency to be proud, then there's speculation to be connected to that.
Well, here, let's just read the first. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Trinavarta represents the false pride produced by useless scholarship. Now, there's other sources of pride. I have money. I can sing and dance. If somebody has a pride in something. But one of them that's a very strong one is tendency towards material scholarship, mental speculation, knowing things by that way, and pride in that. That opulence that makes me grand and better than others, and others are inferior to me. It's one of the sources of pride. So there is a connection, but it's not the only source of pride.
Yeah, this is very specific.
Yes.
Trinivas is specific.
Yes, it's correct. Yes. Your other question?
Is about Krishna's protection for the devotees.
Krishna's protection for the devotees, yeah.
So, if we fall prey of any of these bad qualities, does it mean that Krishna is not protecting
no.
us?
No. It means that we like them. We like to indulge in them. So it's not Krishna is unwilling or unable. It's, he doesn't interfere. If we're attached, he doesn't interfere. But if we want him, he'll protect us from that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Not that I'm worried. I'm thinking of the process of purification that most of us have to go through. And then I guess sometimes sincerity is not as strong as
that's the issue. It's not that Krishna isn't willing to protect us, or he's failing in his duty. He's negligent. We're weak. And Krishna doesn't interfere with that. He doesn't force us to become free from that which we're attached to. Unless he shows some very special mercy, and then he takes it away.
We're the devotees, so can we expect this thing of hope against hope one day?
Yes. But it's a function of our sincerity, how long that may take. The intensity of our desire, the hankering, for that not indirect and covered and mixed, but direct, pure association with Krishna. That's the operative factor. Krishna's mercy is there, he's ready. Okay, we'll end there. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.